hour ago, my youngest of three sisters is a counselor. She's Dr. Davenport. We are still, of course, she's married, but she's a Davenport still. And she shares statements and pictures that are very profound. This is the one she shared about an hour ago. Snoopy and Charlie Brown are sitting on a dock overlooking a lake. Their backs are pointed to us. And Charlie Brown says, "Someday we will all die, Snoopy." And Snoopy says, "True, but on all the other days we will not." And that is quite profound. And as a counselor, grief counselor, a lot of times, my sister knows that that is something probably that she has shared or she will share in coming days. For those visiting, we are finishing a study of miracles this month, and in the sermon, a time with Jesus in the upper room. We don't come to these verses very often. Obviously, there's so much to come to, but I want to read you three paragraphs that describe a Jewish funeral. This is what Jesus would be walking onto as he came to Bethany. And normally in Palestine, because of the climate, burial followed death quickly. There was a time when a funeral was an exceedingly costly thing. The finest spices and ointments were used to anoint the body. The body itself was clothed in the most magnificent robes. All kinds of valuables were buried in the tomb along with the body. By midway through the first century, this had become a ruinous expenditure. Naturally, no one wished on such an occasion to be outdone by his neighbor, and the wrappings and robes with which the body was covered and the tomb or the treasures left in the tomb became ever more expensive. It had become an intolerable burden, which no one liked to alter until the advent of a famous rabbi named Gamaliel II. He gave orders that he was to be buried in the simplest possible linen robe, and so broke the extravagance of funeral customs. To this day at Jewish funerals, a cup is drunk to Rabbi Gamaliel II, who rescued the Jews from their own ostentatious extravagance. From his time on, the body was wrapped in a simple linen dress, which was sometimes called by the very beautiful name of the traveling dress. As many as possible would attend the funeral. Everyone was to proceed in courtesy and respect to join the procession on its way. One curious custom was that the woman walked first, for it was held that since woman by her first sin brought death into the world, she ought to lead the mourners to the tomb. As the tomb memorial speeches were sometimes made, and everyone was expected to express the deepest sympathy, and on leaving the tomb, the others stood in two long lines while the principal mourners passed between them. But there was this very wise rule. The mourners were not to be tormented by idle and uninvited talk. They were to be left at that moment alone with their sorrow. In the house of mourning, there were set customs. So long as the body was in the house, it was forbidden to eat meat, to drink wine, to wear phylacteries, or to engage in any kind of study. No food was to be prepared in the house. Such food as was eaten must not be eaten in the presence of the dead. As soon as the body was carried out, all furniture was reversed, and the mourners sat on the ground or on low stools. On the return from the tomb, a meal was served, which had been prepared by the friends of the family. It consisted of bread, hard-boiled eggs, and lentil. The round eggs and lentils symbolized life, which was always rolling to death. Deep mourning lasted for 7 days, on which the first three were days of weeping. During these 7 days, it was forbidden to anoint oneself, to put on shoes, to engage in any kind of study or business, even to wash. The week of mourning was followed by 30 days of lighter mourning. And those who give us this information say, and that's the scene upon which Jesus approached as he came into Bethany. And we're in John 11, verse 17. Briefly, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. And we looked at these verses last week, but this gives us a segue to come to the place where we are today. Verse 28. After she had said this, Martha, I believe that you're the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. And when Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. And when the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to mourn there. And so you see some of the interworkings of what we read and how one place closed, the house closed, if you will. They're now outside. 7 days of mourning, a lighter mourning having taken place. In verse 32, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And that's exactly what Martha had said to Jesus. I was told only today of a possibility. Obviously, they probably had said this several times during the time when Jesus had not come. We made that observation last week. Human nature would tell us they thought it and said it many times. And a great deal of sorrow would have been there. The mourning, a loss of a brother, and certainly all that was transpiring. This comment was given to me only today from a sister's point of view. Someone who has brothers and who perhaps could relate to such a thing, suggested there could have been some anger there too. Where were you? Where were you? The sisters to Lazarus, the beloved brother. We don't know that. But those who have siblings and those who have brothers certainly acknowledge perhaps what they would have felt when they made a similar statement. Sorrow, for sure. Maybe a little bit of anger, because he could have been there. He should have been there. And he would not have died if he had come sooner. And I shared with someone this week, when you see things that you haven't seen before, and Jesus told us in verse 14, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, he said to the 12. not sure I had seen that, as I mentioned last week. He had a plan. He followed it perfectly, and it involved not going to Lazarus when he found out that he could have been there and would have done something. I'm glad I was not there, because something greater than the event, if you will, would transpire. He knew what he would do when he got there. Well, verse 33 hits home with most of us. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. I was told, those who know the Greek language, there's a hint of anger in the original word used here, as well as emotion. He wept. He was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And that extra addition of the acknowledgement of his emotional response to what he was seeing suggested a tint of anger there. What was he responding to? Mourning. Tears. He knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. But when you see people in mourning, sometimes we are surprised that we too tear, weep. It's a natural response. Others' emotions will bring something out from us, even if we're stoic people. Even if we realize that they're in a better place, we would be selfish to wish them back. But the emotion of the sisters and the crowd, John gives us an idea. The Jews who were there, he saw the weeping and he wept. He wept. And he was deeply moved in spirit, little s, and troubled. Tommy?
Yeah.
He could have been wailing at this point.
Yeah.
So loudly. And, you know, it's comforting to know that he's there with us when we lose family members too.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are we thankful to have that verse? When I do funerals, I usually refer to this. And I remind them, somebody answer, Shirley. It shows reality in John and humanity. And what would Jesus do if he were here? I have raised. He would share in our grief. He understands what we're going through. And that's cathartic in many ways, to know that Christ understands what you're feeling, and it's okay. If he were here, he would do the same thing. He responded as a human from the heart. His inner being, the spirit, little s, was touched, moved, and it led him to shed some tears. More than just a trickle. To what extent, I'm not certain. Others suggest much more. But that doesn't matter how much, how long, how loud he shared in the circumstances and the humanity. Anne? Yeah.
And so it shows, as Shirley said, that humanity in him, but that it's an emotion that God gave us, and that if his son, who he was God, it's okay for him to be too.
Yeah, and the comment for those at home, especially, it's okay for men to weep. We see it here, it's okay. And there's a mentality, maybe not as strongly today, but certainly in the past, that it's a sign of weakness that you're crying. Be a man. Be a man. As if you can't.
It's permission.
an example. There's nothing I can do about it. But I have my dad's quivering chin. There are some times when I don't understand it, I don't expect it, and my dad was that way. When he would speak at certain times or about certain things or when he was in a certain circumstance, I have his quivering chin. I'm proud of it. I gladly grab hold of it, but it's okay. The example, the permission, if you will. Jesus relates to the circumstances in which he finds himself. And that's an important thing. I found a lesson. I decided not to take time today, but it may come up sometime in future months. But it's the tearful teacher. The tearful teacher. And it's making some important points around this verse, not needing to spend the time now, but maybe later. "Where have you laid him?" Jesus asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. And Jesus wept. And the Jews said, "See how he loved him." It made a statement to those there. I want to be sure to say, as if it needs to be said, I don't think it does, but because someone doesn't weep, doesn't mean they don't love. Some handle their grief differently than others. Some have shed the tears in the car, at the home, in the back room, previous days, to where when you come to a funeral setting, don't be quick to make decisions about someone's love or lack of love based on their emotional response in those settings. Everyone is different. And I would suggest don't make an incorrect observation of someone who just really breaks down. Somebody that's really wailing or moaning deeply in that circumstance. It's not as if they don't believe in eternal life, they don't believe in the resurrection, they don't believe that that person is in a better place. Don't make assumptions about emotions in such a setting. But then the Jews see how he loved him. But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Is that an honest appraisal? What's the negative of that statement? Not trusting the circumstances, not trusting the healer, John? His fault he died? And Mary and Martha's maybe, but we might not have been so harsh toward them, though they certainly knew. But Pat? Yeah. He stayed away because he couldn't do this act. Remember, we're studying miracles. What's the positive? They believe that Jesus had given sight to a blind man. And in the need to acknowledge the humanity and to see the negative and to be certain that we don't cast doubt. God, why didn't you do something? Why were you not here for us? I will never forget this story. I'm not sure who told it, but I've recounted it a number of times, of a person who, there was a funeral and he just did not really want to go to the funeral home. It was difficult on him. And he just would rather not. And if we were to choose, hey, if we had our choice, we would not do certain things too. By the way, we need to be at funeral homes to offer encouragement to members of our church family. But he walked in. He was very stoic. He stood beside family members, gave hugs, stayed a good amount of time, but not any longer than he was able, and he went home. And all the way home, he said, I didn't feel like I did anything. I didn't say much. I just accomplished nothing. A card came just a few days later. What do you think it said? I could not have made it except for you being there. Sometimes our presence is better than words. We are hard on ourselves, thinking we need the exact words. I have about that many pages, front and back, 11-point, single-spaced, and it's called Caregivers, that I've accumulated. I haven't added to it in a while, but about 6 years ago when we were at Parkway, I had been culminating and bringing together, and we actually had some sessions on a Wednesday night to train in the lessons, those who were there, to educate the members on the art of caregiving. And there's several main topics and several details from many, many sources. And it's about that thick. To bind it, it took two bindings, caregivers. And when dealing with the subject of death, I haven't looked at it. I'm just going from memory. I know the first thing on the list that you are not to say. And what is that? It is God's will. Grief counselors tell us it may be His will. And they're not refuting that possibility. And obviously, if it happened and you're praying according to God's will, we all know that our prayers will be answered. But we need to be careful, because it's God's will that a three-year-old was hit by a car in front of our house 2 weeks ago. As you would imagine, some scenes that we could have gone through. Was that God's will? That wasn't His will. It's the natural act, and He lets nature take its natural course. Be careful what you say. It's better to not say anything. And there were other things given. I can share them at some future point if you want. But there's some things that are just better not said. And it doesn't mean that we should feel terrible if we once said that and now we regret it because of what I've said. Just be careful what you say. Your presence is strong enough many times. Tommy? Yeah.
I'm just going to give you grace and, you know, whatever you say, because you're not yourself today.
Yeah.
Right? And exactly what you said, be careful what you say to them. You know, a lot of people always have strong memories of funerals. And that can stay with people quite a while.
Yeah.
We have to be very careful. They're very frail. They need a lot of support, and they need a lot of grace.
And they don't need us to analyze their emotional words, because it's their heart speaking. And that's what Tom suggested, obviously. Be careful that you're not analyzing, correcting, or taking negatively what people say at a funeral in a grief situation. Let's move on, but these are things we can think about. Being there matters. What you say can matter if you say the wrong thing. Don't say so much. Just let them know you care. Jesus, verse 38, once more deeply moved. So twice we have His emotional response. Moved in spirit and troubled. The same word. Deeply moved, if you will, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died, Martha said. If you had been here, he would have not died. Don't you know everyone was watching, listening, wondering what's going to happen? Do you think he got their attention when he says, take away the stone? Now, we don't need to add things to Scripture. I think we need to be careful about that. We don't know what else has happened. We don't know how long some of this has happened, though we know something about 7 days of light mourning and some of those things. We don't know if other words were said. But John gives us the main words. Take away the stone. Now, Martha is the practical one. She was in the kitchen preparing a meal, feeling very upset because Martha was not helping. Mary is out there with Jesus. And it shows us the reality of the female spirit, mind, and habit. But Mary, being the practical one, immediately says, but Lord, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. If you'd been here, he would not have died. And her quick response, my words, but that's the implication, if you open the tomb, there's going to be an odor. There's going to be an odor. And Jesus says, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? Now, that doesn't necessarily answer her response to me. But it's Jesus' way of benefit of the doubt, Tommy. Benefit of the doubt. I'm going to have to write that in. I'll give you credit. Benefit of the doubt. Let's move past that. This isn't the time to give you a lesson. Just to remind you about belief that you'll see the glory of God. What was to be the glory of God? Lazarus walking out of that tomb. And he had said early on, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask, Martha said in verse 22, the glory of God. Let's see, I just remembered verse 4, when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. He said, this is going to bring glory to God's Son. Oh, by the way, it's going to bring about belief. And that's why John wrote his gospel. So it's going to bring about glory of God. I will bring him glory. So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked up and says, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. So he's not saying something that he needs to say to himself. He's saying it so others hearing it would benefit from the situation and move them to the opportunity of belief. I said it for them. It's for their benefit. And when he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! And I don't know who said it. Don't know where I was. But I agreed when they said this. If Jesus had not said, Lazarus, other bodies would have come out of the tombs. I don't know that to be the case, but I can see how you might think that. Those who are dead, come out. I can see how he making the statement. It's worth considering. Jesus had the power over death. And if he can do nothing about death, what good is he? I dared to say last week. Lazarus, come out. I find it interesting, verse 44, John says, the dead man came out. What's John reminding us of if we had already forgotten? Lazarus was dead, and he looked like someone who was dead when he came out, because his hands and feet were wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. He looked like someone who had died, but he was coming out of the tomb, wrapped in the less ostentatious garb that Rabbi Gamaliel II had changed the culture, as we began class by reading. And Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Take off the grave clothes. Ephesians uses that metaphor, the grace clothes and the grave clothes. We died, now we're alive, spiritually speaking, is inferred in the book of Ephesians. But here, grave clothes, the linen, the wrappings, all that was involved in preparing the body for burial. Your comments, reflections, if I need to be corrected, do it. I can handle it. Any additions? Richard? And would you have moved?
They would have been waiting for that stone to be moved.
Yeah.
He thinks there's a time period here. And he says, move the stone. He says a few words. Lazarus isn't there. They don't go in. He hops out. So he was, in my opinion, really dead. And was waiting for Jesus to give the command for him to come out.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question John wants us to realize he was dead. Richard made the correct observation. If he were not dead, he would have been unwrapped way before this moment, and he would have been right there where the stone was. I've shared with you, I think, very briefly a number of classes ago when it came up. I didn't realize a number of years ago that I'm a little bit claustrophobic. We were in a circumstance. It was an RV. We were visiting in Oregon. We stayed in the family's RV, and it's a comfortable bed, but it was about this far from the top. And after less than 10 seconds, I started feeling a little bit queasy. I'd never felt it before. Are you one of these when you watch television? I saw it just this week, of someone who was buried alive, and they showed us from the inside what they were doing to try to get out. I would have closed my eyes and just said, Lord, take me. Claustrophobia would have taken over. I would be in deep trouble. And some people are claustrophobic. You can't really tell your body differently. There's nothing you can do to control it, I suppose. Although that night I got out from under the close. By the way, when Gregory went to a Coast Guard cutter, our son in the Coast Guard, we went to visit him and see the place later, and I thought, oh no, I could not be here. Tommy, tell me about a submarine.
We're in cozy warm, right? Very cozy warm. Live right in there. That guy said he's never seen anybody fall asleep in an MRI. I had good earplugs. It was warm, comfortable. I fell asleep.
You are the rare exception, but maybe others. I see people going through MRIs in television shows. Obviously, it's staged, but they show what would take place, and I don't want to think about it. I would hopefully close my eyes and think about Terry and be okay. I don't know. But this comes to mind, of being enclosed, of being inside. He was dead. He was dead. Sten and maybe Errol, Evan? Stan? There you go. Yeah. Be sure I repeat it correctly. Stan made the correct observation, and it's a great one for us to realize that sometimes God's glory is at work, and God won't give you more than you can handle. How many times have we said that? But the suggestion was made, except that you have Him. God won't give you more than you can handle because you have Him. And that is that close enough? It seemed like it was a little bit different. But God will help us to handle those things. It won't be a human effort. It would be in cohorts with the Creator of heaven and earth, the one who knows us deeply, the one who cares about us deeply. Evan, you had a comment? Yeah, and that's where I'd heard. I've written the embryomai under the verse 33, and I'm not sure that I've pronunciated it correctly, but you know, I just realized something. There are times when we have seen verses and taught topics for a number of times over a period of years. Am I missing it that John doesn't describe at all that the dead men came out and very little is given to us except that? Lazarus did come out, and he was clothed in the grave clothes, and take them off. Would you have liked to have had more? I'm not so sure. Anyone faint? Anyone go, oh, it's okay. Concerned with odor? That's already been raised. We got the necessary information. I made the mistake once, telling my dad I'm going to go get in the line and ask that question. Gary, you won't even care. When you get to heaven, you're not going to care about those things. Oh, well, I think I will. He just looked at me and shook his head. And? Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Christ is about life, Satan involved with death. It certainly shows the contrast. I haven't said it yet. I'm glad that Ann's comment would help me. Christ was responding to what death was doing to the people. He was responding to what death was doing to the people, of the effect that it has upon us. And even though he knew he was going to raise him, he knew that. Evan? Yeah. Well, Terry has raised, or others have raised, and we talked about it. What favor did he do him? And that's an honest response. what favor did he do Lazarus? Because he was not going to live forever. He would go through and experience death again. And that's a human response. It's a human element, if you will. But obviously he would have been thrilled to be back with his family and all of that. But it's just an honest response of the reality that he was going to die again. Stan? Yeah. Yeah, the culture of the male responsibility to a family, and of course they were without that male leadership and provisions, absolutely. Well, verse 43 gives us the reality of the world in which Jesus ministered. I wish it were different. I wish it were different. Therefore, because of what's there, therefore many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did put their faith in him. Duh. Wouldn't you expect that? Wouldn't you hope for that? I'm thankful to know it. It brought glory to God, and it brought forth faith in Christ. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. And the chief priests and Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. If you watch The Chosen, two seasons, the Nicodemus is in there a number of times as Nicodemus, if you will. But some of the silliness and political naivety and other things are addressed there as associated with the Sadducees, Pharisees, and the Sanhedrin. And their response should have been, you won't believe it. You won't believe what happened. This is the Son of God. He raised someone from the dead. You cannot refute it. It's too obvious. Too many people. What are we accomplishing? All about me. All about me. I think I hear rain out there. Here is this man performing many miraculous signs. I don't know where I heard it first. I don't know if it was a simple utterance and it just had a profound effect upon me. But I was around someone or I saw someone who, in the circumstance, said something, and it's as if they were surprised. Did I say that out loud? Did I just say that out loud? The Pharisees should have had that moment. Did I just say this out loud? A man's performing miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. It's all about me. That was their attitude. The political place and the spiritual place that they occupied. Why can't they just be excited that a family has been restored? That someone who was dead is now alive. But it's the reality of the ministry of Jesus. It's what he had to deal with. And I wish it were different, but the predestination element of the life, death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, none of this is a surprise. All of them made their willful choices. It wasn't pressed upon them that you have to say this, you have to think this, you have to do this, and it's predetermined outside of your choice. That's not the case. And this is one of those reminders. Let's call a meeting, and this about us and how this is going to affect us. Don't you wish it would have been different? But if it had, what would have happened? Christ would not have gone to the cross. The will of God would have not been lived out. But they were responsible for what they thought and said. They were responsible for this lack of belief or faith. And we're reminded of that. Come back with me in 2 weeks. We'll be away next week. We'll finish Lazarus, make a few comments, and encourage you to come with questions or comments that you might have. Thank you.